number 3, 04294. Excursus Greg Zimmer. Good morning, Mr. Kinsler.
Good morning. Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Brian Kinsler. I represent the appellant Greg Zimmer. The issues in this case can be broken down into three questions, I think. First, did the district court clearly err with respect to the amount of loss calculation? Second, did the district court fail to address a disputed issue involving the amount of loss? And thirdly, is remand required under Dean and McKittyuk, or under Bukhari and other cases that have followed in this circuit?
Mr. Kinsler, maybe can you help me with this?
Yes.
Because in the brief you say that the loss amount should have been reduced by an amount equal to the original extension of credit to Mr. Zimmer.
Yes.
But it seemed to me that he wrote a series of bad checks that totaled $147,000 after he had exhausted his original line of credit. So why was there any need to deduct the amount of the original line of credit?
In this particular case, there were a number of different ways, as is often the case, in determining the amount of loss. At the end, I think it needs to be explained chronologically. Mr. Zimmer had a credit card. It had a $25,000 limit. He began to spend and repay it, spend and repay it. He went beyond the limit, repaid it, and then began to bounce checks. The credit limit was extended beyond the $25,000 with no approval, and eventually his bad checks increased in frequency until finally at the end of the day when the credit card company stopped him, it was at approximately $145,000 plus approximately $15,000 or $14,000 interest when they finally said, enough is enough. So there's borrowing interspersed with paying off the debt, interspersed with more bad checks. This is essentially a bad check case, but the bottom line that was chosen by the parties was the amount at the end of the day that was owed to the credit card company. For its part, the credit card company claimed it was the amount of loss is approximately $145,000.
Let me ask you this. The district court calculated the guideline range at 24 to 30 months. What do you say is the correct range?
We think it should have been somewhat lower.
Right.
It should have been approximately $80,000 or...
No, not the amount of the loss. The range was 24 to 30, and your claim is that it should have been, like, a little bit lower, the range, 21 to 27 or something like that.
Well, if the district court credited our arguments, it would have been approximately 21 to 27 months.
All right, but the sentence imposed is 46 or 48 months.
Yes.
So what difference does it make?
Well, I think it's difficult to understand where the court, the point at which the court added on to the guideline range. That's first of all. Second of all, the difference between 80,000 and 157,000 is nearly twofold, almost precisely twofold. And it's difficult to separate those issues because the circuit court, the matter is complicated by the fact that Mr. Zimmer apparently decided that he didn't want to stick around long enough to find out what the outcome of Booker was. I should say that he had appeared with
an abstanded for 7 months.
He
stole more money when he was gone.
Apparently so. He lost 2 points for acceptance of responsibility. He gained 2 points for obstruction, which essentially doubled his original guidelines range from 12 to 18 months to 24 to 30. And then those same factors when he was finally sentenced, those same factors were essentially doubled up again. In other words, the amount of loss was determined to be at the higher end, instead of closer to 80, closer to 160. The egregiousness of his conduct didn't just double his sentence from 12 to 24 months, but again doubled it from 24 to 48 months.
I understand an argument that the sentence was unreasonable, that's too high a sentence, but to base the argument on this mathematical calculation of what's included in the law seems to be a little weak to me.
Well, it's to be sure not.
Yeah, I'm looking at this and thinking that the judge, whatever the loss was, thought 46, 48 months would be the appropriate sentence here.
I think that's correct. I think that's the problem. I think it's difficult, even if it's a relatively small difference, I think it's difficult to guess what the district court was thinking when it added 24 months or however long it added. Did it add 30 months to
the sentence? You wanted to protect society, that's what you're thinking of.
But yes, I don't doubt that. But what I don't know is whether the judge thought, I think I'll add 30 months onto this, or I think I'll add 24 months onto this. I think that's something we need to know with some fairly high degree of certainty. There is a difference if the judge were to follow our recommendation. Mr. Zimmer could have gotten a guideline range of 21 months. He followed...
Not with this judge. Not on these facts.
Perhaps not, but the guideline calculation could have been as low as 21 months, and instead he received 30 months. On top of those 30 months, another 18 months was added. Or was it 28 months that was added to 21? We don't know what it is, and I think this court's jurisprudence over the last year and a half indicates that until we are sure that the guidelines calculation was determined correctly, and if we are not allowed to consider the issue of reasonableness. That's the line in the sand that I think this court's drawn on a number of occasions. So I think that so long as the district court clearly skipped one of the issues that was raised by Mr. Zimmer, that is, the issue of the credit card company double counting certain checks, I'm not sure that it's appropriate to guess how much more was added to a sentence because we don't know the starting point. We have to know the starting point. I should also point out that under a conservative guess, it would have been 21 to 27 months. Our expert, the expert that appeared before the court and gave largely uncontested testimony, was that it was definitely $32,000 extra because the credit card company had double counted certain checks, but quite possibly as high as $52,000 in excess. That would also have an impact on the guidelines range. I think that would drop it to 18 to 24 months. Then we're talking about a sentence that is conceivably nearly tripled.
You know, we might have had a better argument if your client hadn't stolen $100,000 from his wife in the news, abandoned the family, absconded for 7 months. If you got a mountain to climb with this fellow.
Well, in my line of work, nevertheless, I still think it's extremely important for the purposes of procedure to make sure that we know that the guidelines determination is calculated correctly before we move on to determining whether under 3553A reasonableness is there. I certainly think that there's a reasonable argument to be made. However, I don't think we can reach that yet. I think we have to look at the underlying facts that got thrown out a bit by the court, that got disregarded a bit by the court when Mr. Zimmer reappeared for sentencing. There was an extensive hearing.
Has he ever been charged with violating the conditions of his bond by absconding?
No.
And that's a consideration here, too, I would assume.
I'm sure it is. And for failing to appear and then turning himself in again, he received a loss of 4 levels, which essentially doubled his sentence to the range of 24 to 30 months. And again, that was doubled on top of that by the court. I think there's also another issue that the court should consider if the court is going to consider reasonableness. These numbers were expressly excluded, including a large amount that was suggested by the government that should be considered in the amount of loss. And yet, And I understand that this is meant to be to some extent, but that same amount, though ignored by the court for the purposes of guidelines, was simply plugged in to the 3553A analysis. If that's possible, that doesn't just render the guidelines advisory, it renders them nugatory. It renders them a suggestion, not even something that the court has to rigorously approach, because then anything that doesn't fit under the guidelines, including amounts, including drug amounts potentially, can simply be slipped in under 3553 because they didn't pass the same rigorous test that the guidelines require. I think that's problematic. I see my time is up.
Thank you. Mr. Gianpietro.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Gordon Gianpietro. I represent the United States in this matter. The district court's 48-month sentence is 18 months above the advisory guideline range, but 16 years below the statutory maximum for the offenses of conviction. As this court knows, Zimmer's appeal challenges the loss calculations, but doesn't really engage the reasonableness analysis because, in his view, the first step of the process is critical, and unless he's satisfied that that was done properly, this court shouldn't reach the reasonableness. For purposes of this argument in its brief in here today, the government doesn't concede that the district court's loss calculations were clearly erroneous, which is the standard. But if they were, we're talking, as you indicated, Judge Evans, about a one-level difference. If the defendant is right, the top of the guideline range is 27 months. If the government and the district court are correct, it's 30 months. So the district court's upward departure, his variance from the top of the range, is, in any event, a reasonable sentence and one that's supported, I think, amply by the record. The flight, the theft from family, the additional bank fraud. It's significant that he didn't simply steal from his wife and his in-laws. He actually committed additional bank fraud in the course of his flight, which was the offensive course of conviction in this case. So while it is true generally, as this court has held, that factual disputes should be resolved by the district court, the Dean case makes very clear that those factual disputes have to be material to the sentence that's imposed. And I think clearly here the one-level dispute that was going on between the government and the defense was not at all what drove the sentence in this case. It was the defendant's conduct while absconding after the first sentencing hearing. So I don't think it's fair to say, as the defense has argued, that the first step of the process has to be airtight before the second step of the process, the reasonableness of the sentence, is addressed. So if there are no questions, I will simply rest on the briefs that the government submitted.
Just before you sit down, I was perplexed by how you could even do this. I thought MasterCard, all these card companies, are really vigilant on to he had a $25,000 line of credit, and he ended up with whatever the number is here, 100,000 or something.
Right.
How could you do that?
Judge, as I understand, and I'm not an expert in this area, there's a Treasury regulation that requires credit card companies to credit your account the moment they receive an ATM deposit for the amount of
the ATM deposits here were made at banks that were at different ATMs, not connected with the card, so it had a couple of days or something before it would get caught. But he had to keep feeding this thing, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yes, the bank allowed him to do it for probably a year. They allowed him to submit NSF checks, pay the bounced check fee, and then he would cover it later with a subsequent check. So
a subsequent payment.
Well, yes, but there were some legitimate payments mixed in there. So the bank tolerated some level of NSF checks. I don't think I would have, but that's what the bank did in this case. So they allowed it to continue for a year before shutting it down.
He's a professional scammer is what he is.
That's certainly the view of the government, Your Honor. So, Judge, I think that's why it went on as long as it did.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can you remember that credit card company?
Yeah.
Ron, I believe. Yes. Thank you.
I'm applying for the credit card.
I don't believe that company is any more than
I am. Probably. Why?
Let me just say, in response to one of the comments that was just made, Mr. Zimmer is a businessman whose business went downhill quickly, and he couldn't keep up. He couldn't pay off his bills. He tried to write as many checks as he could.
Why?
That may be correct, But that does not make him, I think, in the court's words, a professional scam artist. He is a failed businessman that went down in the way that many Americans go down. They couldn't keep up with their credit card bills. Had this been a particular single amount of loan, he would have been fine. He would have defaulted on the loan. They would have foreclosed on his house, and that would have been the end of
his life. Ally stole from his wife too.
For whatever reason, and I have not been prosecuted for fraud in federal court, but for whatever reason, Mr. Zimmer, after waiting around for quite a while to see this case to its disposition, eventually, obviously, lost his resolve and tried, I think, rather desperately to go and make, I think the word is, a parlay of what he could obtain. He did turn himself in, and I don't think that there is much more here than a businessman's fraud. I also want to talk about reasonableness because the court asked about reasonableness, and I want to point out that many of the same items that we talked about with respect to the amount of loss issue were there with respect to reasonableness. I see that my time is up. I apologize. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much.